those of the participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers. It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, good morning. We're Rachel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. And Boker Tov, Lekol HaMaazinim.
And Tzoraim Tovim b'Israel.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We are the free voice for Israel. We're a community-supported program that depends on your support to stay on the air. We are reaching our first whole year, our birthday, 1 year on the air in October, and we're already starting fundraising efforts towards next year. We need to raise $5,400. That's $5,400. So keep the contributions coming. We're starting now to stay on the air for next year. So if you want to find out how, you can visit our website at www.israelisreal.weebly.com. That's Israel is Real as one word, .weebly.com. And you can email us at israelisreal1590@gmail.com. israelisreal1590@gmail.com. That's just really good emails, please. And we'd like to take a moment to let you know about one of our sponsors, who without him, we would probably not be on the air so long. So we are very, very grateful to Vern Main, the patent and trademark law firm of Vern Main and Associates, a local firm with a global practice, is pleased to announce its new location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua and on the web at www.vernmain.com. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Vern Main and Associates at their offices on 547 Amherst Street. That's 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, or on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com, vernmain.com.
And did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know anything about the declining Jewish population in Middle Eastern countries between 1948 to 2004? For example, Algeria, from 140,000 Jewish people, they have today less than 100. Did you know that Iran used to have 100,000? Right now they have only 11,000. Did you know that Iraq, with a community which is old for 3,000 years, they used to have 150,000 Jewish people. Today they have less than 40.
Wow.
Lebanon, with 20,000 Jewish people, less than 100. And maybe the biggest, Morocco, with 265,000, they have less than 5,500 people.
And I understand that there is one remaining Jew in Afghanistan.
Only one?
I've been told.
He's shutting down the lights.
He's saving Judaism in Afghanistan.
I cannot believe. Okay.
And I'd like to also announce to our listeners that CJUI, Christians and Jews United for Israel, is inviting you to join them at Boston's annual Genesis Awards and Interfaith Rally in support of Israel. This will take place on September 26th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at Temple Emet in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. The keynote speaker is going to be Frank Gaffney, who will be speaking on defending Israel against threats of nuclear Iran and defending America against radical jihadists and Sharia law. So if you would like to attend this, the information is at cjui@cjui.org. That's again CJUI, Christians and Jews United for Israel, cjui@cjui.org. And that brings us
to a few facts about
this week.
Yes. The Prime Minister Netanyahu came to Washington in August 31 in order to restart for how many times now?
The past 60 years.
Let's go only with last
only
10
with
years.
Just, yeah.
To restart the discussion for peace. And August 31, when Netanyahu just came to Washington, four innocent Israeli citizens have been murdered in cold blood by shooting them on the head.
Shooting them on the head
after this. September 1st.
Well, they shot them in, they ambushed their car.
Yeah, the Palestinian ambushed the car, and Hamas was very happy to say that it was a glorious mission. And in this glorious mission, one woman, which was 9 months pregnant, was also shot.
Which I would consider that five people murdered?
Absolutely.
And not four.
September 1st, two Israeli have been shot, wounded, and they are in the hospital right now.
Again, an ambush on a car.
In September 2nd, one child was stoned when the child was in with his parents in his parents' car.
Again, on cars driving
and
by.
This, and we can call this the effort to gain peace.
Yes, this is... sorry, this is typical. It's interesting. I was just speaking to someone last week before the peace talks started up again. And I said, you know, he said, is it dangerous in Israel? And I said, no, it's not. And as we speak about this now happening, this is not regular life, although some people would like it to be, but this is not regular life. And I said to him, it's not dangerous to be in Israel, but it has been sort of a regular occurrence whenever the peace talks begin, and there is a peace process forced out and starting to happen again, that it becomes dangerous in certain places because the people who are against peace make it. They want to stop the process.
So before we will go again to Dr. Mordechai Kedar with his third part about introduction to the dictionary, Arab dictionary that we just studied. This is the third
installment
that we are. Yeah, I would like to say that in my mind, Israel cannot mortgage her existence and her future. And to have an end of the conflict, it is not so simple. If it was so simple, we would be probably there. We would be probably in a place with peace.
Mm-hmm.
So the state of Israel cannot take a chance of destroying herself and her citizens. And now
we're going to cut to a break. And before we do that, I'd just like to remind people that we are listening, as you said, Sonia, to our final installment with Dr. Mordechai Kedar, who is an Israeli scholar of Arabic literature and an expert on Arab and Muslim culture and thought, and a lecturer at Bar-Ilan University. So he is going to speak again. We call it Tourist Guide to Arabic. We are learning Arabic as we listen. And we are going to cut now to a break. This is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. Israel is real.
WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
The Telegraph, keeping you connected to your community for pennies a day.
When news breaks,
The Telegraph is there. When the community needs a watchdog, The Telegraph is there. When it's time to celebrate the accomplishments of our young athletes and scholars,
The Telegraph is there.
All for pennies a day. The Telegraph has been recognized for 7 years in a row as the best small daily newspaper in New England by the New England Press Association. Find out why one of New England's best daily newspapers is your daily newspaper for only pennies a day.
You know how to tell if a man is serious about the work he does with his hands? Look at his feet. If he's standing around in some discount boot, he probably spends his days just standing around. But if he stands in a pair of Red Wing boots, that means he stands for something. He cares about the work he does and the crew he works with. He works with his brains as much as his brawn. Red Wing work boots are purpose-built for the exact work you do. Red Wing shoes. Work is our work.
Experience exhilaration. Honda Performance lives in our race cars and in the Accord and Civic coupes. Try one out for yourself right now during Honda Performance Days and go to shophonda.com to sign up for your chance to take a pace lap and be on course to start an IndyCar race in the Izod IndyCar two-seater, driven by Mario Andretti.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal residents of the U.S. 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Sweepstakes ends September 5th, 2010 at midnight Eastern Time. Subject to official rules available at shophonda.com. Odds of winning depend on the number of eligible entries received.
I don't recycle. I mean, we can just find another planet for your kids to live on, you know?
Noted non-recycler Tommy Crenshaw talks about the future.
Oh, I can totally see finding another planet that can support life when ours fills up with trash.
Log on to YouGottaBeKidding.org and learn about all the ways you can recycle, unless you're into lame excuses like Tommy's.
Hey, recycling's just not my thing. Starting over on a new planet? Now that's exciting.
Don't be that guy. Unless you want people looking at you funny. Log on to YouGottaBeKidding.org.
We're locally owned, and that means we're here to serve you. Nashua's News and Talk, 1590 WSMN.
Shalom, Dr. Mordechai Kedar. We're very happy to have you on our show, and we will look forward to having you many more times. We have invited you because you are an expert on the Arabs, on the Arab and Islamic society, community, culture, politics, language, and thought. And first of all, maybe before we get started, you could tell us, how did you achieve this expertise? How did you become interested in Islam? And what motivated you?
Let me start with a little biographical detail. I was born to parents who came from Poland to Eretz Israel in the 30s. And my mother tongue is Yiddish. So Arabic is not my language. However, I studied Arabic in high school, and I had a magnificent teacher who taught us not only the language, but also to look at the culture which talks in this language, the Arabic and the Islamic culture. And he very successfully implanted in our souls the love to explore these societies and this culture by reading its literature, by being exposed to its media, by listening to people, by reading whatever they can write. And he actually made us, I would say, thirsty and hungry to know more about Arabic society and about Islamic society. This was a major success because most of our students in the high school in Tel Aviv went later to the intelligence using their skills in Arabic and their thirst to know more about the Arab world, which is the basic characteristic of somebody who wants to succeed in the intelligence. So after 25 years of trying to understand the Arab world through which we read in the intelligence, I continued this attempt to understand this world in the academia since I was released from the army in the mid-90s. So altogether, more than 40 years, I deal with the Arab world, with the Arab society, with Islamic discourse, with Islamic texts, with Friday sermons, with mass media in the Arab world, and I would even say the culture in large meaning of this word. So this is actually my background in Arabic, and since I love it, I do it all the time. Even when I go in my car, I listen to Arabic radio stations, and this exposure to this Arabic, whatever I can intercept, actually brought me to know whatever I know about this world, and I'm not attempting to say that I know everything.
Well, you know a lot more than we do. Well, can we ask you maybe two more words? One is this word I'm hearing lately called taqiyya.
Yeah, taqiyya is the idea that a Muslim, whoever, wherever he lives, can behave in a different way from what he believes that he should in order to survive. Let's say, if he's a Shiite and he lives in a Sunni environment, he might be killed in some places and times when Sunnis did not tolerate Shiites, and vice versa. If a Muslim lives under the rule of infidels who are rather vicious and intolerant to his Islamic creed, he can change or he can behave according to the environment in order to save his life, and as long as in his heart is loyal to his creed, it is okay. So, taqiyya allows people, or the notion of taqiyya allows Muslims to deceive their environment regarding their beliefs and ways of conduct. So, it is well known by Shiites, it is well known by Druze. All were persecuted for history, and today I think that it prevails in many places where Muslims, under the slogan of taqiyya, deceive the others to think that Islam can be tolerated or can be a religion of peace and love and hugs and kisses. Everybody can sit around the fire and sing Kumbaya together. And this is some kind of taqiyya.
Ah, interesting. And this idea, I don't know the words in Arabic, but it's a concept that we hear a lot and we respect, is three words I'm going to throw out to you in English. I don't know if they're related in Arabic or not, but dignity, respect, and humbleness.
Yes, karam and sharaf. These words are connected to the obligation of a Muslim not to be humiliated by others as a person, and of course their dignity also is connected to the behavior of their daughters. A daughter keeps her father's dignity between her thighs. This is actually what this means. And whenever she violates the rulings of Islam by having relations with other boys, she actually acts against the honor of her father, the brothers, her male cousins, and they will settle the account with her because of her conduct. There is a debate whether this is connected to Islam or not, because when they slaughter their daughters on the background of the dignity of the family, or because what we call today an honor crimes or honor killings, Muslim leaders would condemn it because it is not according to the Islamic procedure of how people can be punished, because you need a court, you need witnesses, you need prosecution, you need a judge, and you need a real process. However, they usually say nothing against this habit of killing the daughters on the background of violating the honor of the family, because they know that nobody will listen to them. So they prefer to hold their peace towards this phenomenon rather than to speak about it.
Well, it sounds like there's a, you know how they say behind every good man there's a woman. It sounds like a lot of Islam is based on women from many interesting ways.
Definitely, women are the main threat on the stability of the Islamic society, because if women will start demanding rights like what women have in the West, to study and to work and to choose their spouse and to decide whether they want kids or not, when they will start enhancing their figure by surgeries or by makeup or by all these things, when they demand freedom to behave and to do whatever they like with whoever they like, all these things are against Islam. A woman is obliged to get wedded to whoever her father chooses for her. She cannot choose her partner in life. A woman cannot make abortion by herself, because her fetus belongs to her husband since the beginning. She is only the host, or she is a rented womb to his father's baby. This is how women are viewed. A woman can be beaten by Islam, and this also in the Quran. There is a permission to beat the wife in order to educate them and to convince them to behave according to what the husband wants. So forth. The dignity of the family and the society is in many cases connected to the behavior of women, and especially girls, before they get married.
So this is the reason for as we know now, what a hijab is and what a burqa is, and the suppression of women in general. And a thought comes to mind as how we as Westerners don't understand this, that if you send in Western society, women are very active and involved and integral. And my thought goes to, how insulting it must be to the, Islamic followers or Islamic, religion when we send a political emissary who is a woman.
Well, there are vast changes in the modern times in what connected to women's status. Definitely, there are changes. Women today are educated. Women today are even more educated than men. The age of marriage is not 12 or 9 as it was in the days of Muhammad. Today, there are state laws which mention ages like 17 or 18 as minimal age for marriage, especially for girls. And there are many changes in the Islamic society, not all of them, but in many of society. And in my view, these changes, which are rather rapid, compared with other changes which came into the Islamic world through the history, and these changes, or these rapid changes, undermine the stability of the Islamic society, bring messages which formerly were out of the, or behind the taboo line of the forbidden to speak about. And today, issues like domestic violence, female genital mutilation, and subjects which really preoccupy those poor women in the Islamic world are today Islamic, or are today allowed to be on the table of discussion openly, media, or in public events. So there are changes, definitely. And those ulama, means the people of religion, view these changes as a threat to the Islamic religion in Saudi Arabia, if those religions are not removed from those societies.
My understanding would be that progress is not really looked favorably upon.
I would even say that radicalism today is caused by those rapid changes which infiltrate the Islamic societies.
I would like to throw out maybe two or three more words, and you can choose. One would be caliphate, one would be fatwa, and one would be truth. It's your choice.
But remind me of the words which you...
Caliphate?
Caliphate. This is a very important notion in Islam. The word caliph or khalifa in Arabic means a substitute. It is not mentioned in the Quran. And those Muslims who remained after Muhammad passed away, they didn't know how to name the men who will succeed Muhammad. So they called him the substitute of Muhammad, the substitute of the messenger of Allah, Khalifat Rasulullah. Because the Quran and not other source mentions what is the name of the position of the ruler of Islam. Because nobody is a prophet anymore. Prophet Muhammad was the seal of prophecy. So how would be depicted the one who will succeed him? So they chose this word Khalifa, means the substitute, until Muhammad returns or things like that.
Ah.
So definitely, Caliph is the Arab or the Islamic position of the substitute of Muhammad, however, without the connection to Allah. Only the ruler of daily life of the Muslims.
Ah, okay. So
caliphate is the institution of the caliph, and of course the empire ruled by a caliph is a caliphate.
Okay.
Another notion which we should discuss or we should deal with is what we say hadith. Hadith is the oral tradition. The second in importance of the sources of Islam. Hadith actually is anecdotes from the life of Muhammad, which his friends, the Sahaba, are telling about him, what he agreed to, what he objected, how he relates to all kinds of situations which were around him in the Arab Peninsula. And it usually relates to situations which are not mentioned. The Quran means a Muslim has no other voice or another source to a proper behavior in changing situations. So they try to recruit those Jewish people. in order to learn from them how they should behave. And of course, Karp, whom I mentioned before, was the source of Jewish sources into Islam. Those who inserted Jewish ideas into Islam is mentioned in the Hadith as the source of many traditions which Muhammad adopted from Judaism. And this is why the Hadith is important, because it gives the prophet, it gives the Muslim the solution how to behave in any situation in the world when he is not with the prophet.
Wow. Okay. if I could engage you just for this word truth, and we will, well, maybe before truth, let's go with Allahu Akbar, and we hear this all the time. It's a chant, it seems to be a slogan, it seems to be a battle cry almost. What is it really?
Allahu Akbar means Allah is the greatest. And Allahu Akbar actually is being said by a Muslim in all kinds of moments, crucial moments in his life. And now we hear it again and again when people blow themselves up in Iraq or in Afghanistan or here in Palestine or Israel. They shouted, Allahu Akbar. Not because it is in the cry of battle, but I think it's because the one who is about to blow himself up faces a crucial moment of his life, maybe his death as well. This is why they keep showing this this man.
So is the greatest accomplishment you can have, would it be to martyr to yourself, to die in the name of Allah?
Yes, because when you are a martyr, you get all the goodies of the martyr in heaven. And this is very, very important, because the desert, the desert where they lived in the Arab Peninsula, provided nothing to the Muslims. Only hot places and very, very poor food. The paradise, on the contrary, if you die in the battle, is, let's say, you are being wedded to 72 huris, 72 virgins. And as you know, in Islam, they cannot have any relations with a woman if she is not married to them. So the Quran already says that they, in the martyrs, will be married with hurain, with those huris which have a nice makeup around their eyes. They are constantly 30 years old, and according to other traditions, they are 33. Means midlife, yet experienced. The shaheed, means the martyr, sits in heaven on a futel, on an armchair, with a crown on his head, and every stone in this crown is more valuable than the whole world. Every stone. So imagine the face of those who are willing to come to the martyr to get all these goodies. And those 72 virgins, which they are married to, are always married, no matter what happens there. Just think about the challenge of those men dealing with 72 virgins who are constantly virgins. And this, they are able to deal with them, or to engage them, because the shaheed, the martyr, is granted the manpower of 100 men. So what are 72 if he can deal with 100 one after the other? And those women do not eat anything, do not drink anything. This is why they are always clean and ready for the service. And during the service, they are there to listen to everything. And they serve those shaheeds in whatever they those shaheeds want. Those huris, those 72 virgins, not only they don't eat and drink, therefore they are always clean, they also do not have the period. And in Islam, a Muslim cannot have full relations with his wife in the days of menstruation. And those who is in paradise, since they don't have any menstruation, they are always ready to serve the shaheed in anything which he can demand. So this is a real paradise for men.
Well,
what are women being granted in this paradise? Many things. They are having the crown on their heads, and like men, they sit on armchairs made of gold. They, all their things, like men, are being cleaned the minute they die, and they can bring to heaven 50 of their relatives, just like men. And a woman, if she is a virgin, she becomes one of the 72 virgin army of one of the shaheeds. And if she's married, her husband will eventually join her in heaven, and she will be one of his 72 huris, if he deserves to have them.
Well, there is a very huge difference between life on earth and life in paradise, it seems. And,
definitely. Because of the poor country where Islam came to the world, in the desert, Muhammad had to promise his followers whatever they don't have in the desert, fruits and water. Even in the Quran mentions that the Jannah means the Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. Rivers are streaming in its lower part, where the Shaheed can put his feet right into the water. So already then in the Quran, Muhammad already promised these terms in heaven to those who will get killed for the sake of Allah.
And it seems like women have a lot more power in paradise, or at least a lot more.
No, they are enslaved in paradise.
Enslaved. Mm-hmm.
Definitely, they are
living in the golden cage,
like sex dolls in paradise. Of course, they would admit it, but when you read the technical characterization of those holies in heaven, you cannot escape the conclusion that they were viewed as sex dolls.
So Islam is really a man's world all around.
This is a very virile religion. Religion of conquering whoever they deal with and to conquer. Look, and this image of Islam is very much necessary, because Muhammad wanted those Muslims to identify with Islam. So who would you men identify with a religion where its prophet was crucified and bleeding to death on the cross, or a religion whose prophet vanished in a cave on a mountain like Moses? Or would you identify with a religion whose prophet was a conqueror until his last minute, because Islam mentions that Muhammad passed away in the bosom and the tent of his youngest and hyperactive woman, wife, Aisha, in a position which leaves no doubt in the midst of what he passed away. So, with whom would you identify if you were a man?
Okay, I won't go there. All of this brings us to a final concept, which we all, I'm sure, struggle with all our lives. And the word is emet in Hebrew, and in English it's truth. I don't know what it is in Arabic, if you could tell us about that, and we will finish with that.
Well, there is a haq, the word which, haq is truth, haq is right, like human rights, and haq is also one of the epithets of Allah. And the meaning of this word is all these meanings together. So, the truth is Allah, because Allah is a true thing, while all the others are, all the other idols and religions are false. And, of course, the one who believes in this truth of Allah has the right of a Muslim to live as a Muslim. So this is the connection between the right, the truth, and Allah. It's all our haq.
And so everything boils down to you need to live within Islam in order to
experience it.
To live in Islam and to believe in Islam.
Okay.
And if you believe in Islam, you can live in the Islamic framework.
Well, Dr. Kedar, this has been very enlightening. We thank you really for all of these definitions, and it's a beginning of an understanding of a culture that is new to us, and we are only now learning about. And we will be looking forward to having you back to really look more deeply into some of these concepts as we go. So we thank you.
Thank you so much.
And my pleasure and honor.
WSMN
and WSMNRadio.com.
Hi, this is Danny Aiello. You're listening to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn.
Tune in to Crosswinds, hosted by Carl Zahn, Sundays at 11 a.m. on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. Carl is a stand-up comedian, website columnist, and radio veteran who provides a platform for all residents and issues concerning Southern New Hampshire. Listen to his interviews with renowned actors, authors, comedians, activists, and politicians. Call in with your observations or thoughts at 816-1590. It's Crosswinds with Carl Zahn, Sundays at 11 a.m. on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk.
Every year, thousands of teens age out of foster care and face life on their own without the love and support of a family. For over 25 years, the Orphan Foundation of America has provided a safety net of support for these vulnerable young people. With OFA's help, these youth graduate from college and trade school, progress to exciting professional careers, and make the leap from foster care to success. Find out how you can support America's foster youth. Log on to orphan.org. That's orphan.org.
20 years ago, the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law. The act was a huge step forward for the 50 million people in this country living with a disability, and the culmination of years of effort by those who marched and spoke up and refused to be treated as second-class citizens. It helped renew the promise that here in America, we're defined not by our limitations, but by our potential. As we celebrate the 20th anniversary of this historic legislation, it's important to remember that we're still fulfilling that promise. We're still working to secure the rights guaranteed by the ADA, the right to live and work without limits, the right to equal justice under the law, and the right of every person in this country to reach for the American dream. We've come a long way since 1990, and I'm committed to making even more progress in the years ahead. Visit disability.gov to see how you can help.
Brought to you by the American Association of People with Disabilities and the Ad Council.
Nashua was chosen the best place to live twice. If you're planning on living twice, do it with us. 1590 WSMN.
And we're back with WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk with Israel, Israel with Rachel and Sonia. And we have now heard the final installment for the time being with Dr. Mordechai Kedar, who is wonderful, wonderful. We thank him immensely for being with us for these installments. And we will be speaking with him in the future. And Sonia, we had begun talking about this week's incidents. You wanted to say a few more words about that.
Yes, I would say that the core issue of the Middle East, it's not anything from the issues that they are putting on the table.
Mm-hmm.
The core issue is the recognition of a Jewish state,
mm-hmm.
the recognition that this Jewish state has the right and have the right to exist. And
also it exists in the middle of the Middle East.
Exactly, in the middle.
Where it is,
exactly. Not. I don't know if Abbas has the leadership and the strongness to imply it. And the second thing is, if, let's say, he will do this, what about the other states, the other Arab states, which are not accepting any Jewish state, any authority of Jewish state, they absolutely don't agree to have it. And this is actually the core issue, because
right.
if the peace, it's only part of a salami status that we are taking bit by bit from the Jewish state, so this is not a peace.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not have the, how shall I say, we cannot accept it, and we do not have this power to take this type of risks for our future.
It's not an option for us, because it's as we hear often, it's an existential threat. Our existence, mere existence, is being delegitimized and also threatened.
Exactly.
And we're not, as you said in the beginning, we're not willing to mortgage our existence.
Exactly. And in the meantime, we cannot agree to have hostile elements from any territory which will be used to attack us, like the atomic bomb that Ahmadinejad wants so much to threatening us with this.
Mm-hmm.
And the Torah, mm-hmm. Torah portion, oh, today we are like, what, changing our places?
We are. Today I get to do the Torah portion. And this week's Torah portion is Nitzavim Vayelech, which is Deuteronomy 29-31. And we're counting down. We're counting down. This is the last Shabbat and the last Torah portion of the Jewish year of 5770. We are reminded that we can turn away from our sins and return to God. We are in the final throes of the call to repentance, the call to tshuva. In these closing days of the year, our spiritual discipline is to examine and look within and change our path towards the good, towards blessing, and toward God. This is the time of return. This is the time of tshuva. As Deuteronomy 30, verses 9 and 10 tell us, "For Adoshem will once again rejoice over you for good, as God rejoiced over your ancestors, when you obey Adoshem your God to observe God's commandments and God's statutes written in this Torah scroll, and when you return to Adoshem your God with all your heart and with all your soul." It's just that simple. Love God, do right, make tshuva, and God will rejoice over you and bless you. And with that, we are coming to the Jewish New Year next week, this Wednesday, and tomorrow is Slichot. I invite you to come to Congregation Beitenu.
I know.
To celebrate with us at 8 o'clock in the evening, Saturday night. And we say Shana Tova.
Shana Tova, Shabbat Shalom, Shana Tova.
Shabbat Shalom, Shana Tova. Happy New Year. And this is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk with Israel Is Real, the free voice for Israel. Visit our website at www.israelisrael.weebly.com, israelisrael.weebly.com. And we thank you.
Shana Tova.
Next week we will hear the shofar in a pre-recorded interview.